This podcast is sponsored by Canaccord Genuity Wealth Management, award-winning wealth managers who go above and beyond to support and guide you. Visit candowealth.com to start building your wealth with confidence.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by Fraser Nelson and James Forsyth. We're on day four of the latest Tory psychodrama after Number 10 briefed that Dominic Cummings was in the Prime Minister's mind behind several leaks. Dominic Cummings hit back with an explosive blog. And there are more leaks in the papers today. The latest leak, though we do not officially know who that's from, is in the Daily Mail. And this is that Boris Johnson has been accused of saying that he would rather allow bodies to pile high in their thousands than impose another lockdown late last year. Now, Downing Street has strongly denied he made this remark, dismissing it as just another lie. We'll get into the wider aftermath, but James, hearing that quote, where do you think this is going? Clearly, the Daily Mail believe they have the grounds to allege that the Prime Minister did say this, despite the fact that Number 10 are pushing very hard against the idea that Prime Minister would.
Unless there is a recording of this, I find this very hard. This is going to be a he said, she said, right? Because this is not the kind of comment that gets ministered in the notes of a meeting, right? This is going to be Simon Walters' source saying that the Prime Minister did say this, and Number 10 saying, no, he didn't say this. And so unless there are these recordings, which have been talked about a bit over the weekend, unless those exist of this comment, I don't think this is going to settle one way or the other, because the source will claim he said it, and Boris Johnson will deny that he said it. You heard Ben Wallace on the Today programme this morning kind of denying very emphatically that it had been said, and as you said, Number 10 have also denied that. I think it is, though, just another sign of how vicious this whole fight is becoming. I think you highlighted this on Friday, Katie. This is not a fight being conducted according to kind of Queensbury rules. This is a full-on battle between Boris Johnson and Dominic Cummings and Dominic Cummings' allies. I think this is a proper, and I think I don't quite see what is going to cause it to de-escalate.
Fraser, looking at that specific quote, do you think it's damaging to Boris Johnson? A lot of people are sharing it online as proof the Prime Minister should go, but also some unlikely supporters of the Prime Minister emerging, saying that they don't like the Prime Minister, but even by Boris Johnson's standards, they don't believe he would utter such a phrase.
Well, no, it's pretty difficult to look at where we are now, right, in the middle of a lockdown, in spite of COVID having vanished, certainly as a pandemic, is now endemic here. This isn't a Prime Minister who's blasé about it. And also, the quote, of course, is a direct quote, except what's the source for it? In Dominic Cummings' blog, he did attribute in direct quotes to Boris Johnson words that were obviously just Dominic made it up from his head. I mean, he recalled it. Now, there's one thing, Katie, me remembering something you might have said to me, you know, a year ago. But I wouldn't put it in the magazine in direct quotes, not unless I literally had you record it. Now, in journalism, you only use direct quote marks to literally say what somebody's exact words were. If you can't remember the exact words, you don't put it in quote marks. So we're seeing a little bit of his translation. This is one of the tools in Dominic Cummings' arsenal against the Prime Minister. At the time, he said this and he said that. Now there's no proof of it. Number 10, and similarly, it's also fighting back against Dominic Cummings. One of the accusations that he was so sneaky that he was actually sitting there with a mobile phone recording what the Prime Minister said. Now, I don't think, really, if you actually think about it, can you imagine, really, a chief advisor sitting there secretly recording what the boss said just so he can go and shaft the boss afterwards? That would impugn Dominic Cummings' character a bit too much, I think, so I can see why Dominic's angry about this. But the other thing, though, is if you work around Boris Johnson, you know that his modus operandi is to say all kinds of things, to do a reductio ad absurdum, to come up with extreme positions and hear people argue against it. So he'll come up with four or five contradictory positions in the course of a meeting. This is a man who famously wrote an article about why he backed Remain before publishing an article about why he backed Leave. That's how he thinks things through. And also, I guess, to use an analogy closer to home, this is Monday morning. We're about to have an editorial conference to decide what goes in the magazine. People will, in the course of that meeting, come up with all sorts of ideas, some of which will fly, some of which will be too crazy to go in there. And the ultimate test is, what do we publish? Same if you're having a meeting if you're in the middle of a pandemic, You ought to be judged on what you do rather than what you say in the middle of a meeting. And that's why I don't think that this particular tool of taking direct quotes or reported direct quotes, releasing them out of context and giving them as evidence of the darkness of Boris Johnson's heart will have much of a cut through with the public. I mean, remember, Dominic Cummings himself was accused in a Sunday Times review of wanting to let people die in order to protect the economy. And I think he took that very hard. He will have known the damage that kind of accusation can have. And I saw a little glimpse of that and reflected in the briefing against Prime Minister today that I want bodies to pile high in their thousands. It's quite plausible that he will have been saying, well, if you want to have a third lockdown, let's look at the balance of lives. Yes, people will die from COVID, but how many people will die from lockdown? That is exactly the kind of equation you'd hope people are doing when they're imposing restrictions that will hugely impact the lives and livelihoods of the country. So I can see that conversation taking place. I can even see the Prime Minister saying something roughly equating to what was quoted in the Daily Mail today, but I can't see it being particularly scandalous, because in those situations, people will say all sorts of things. What ultimately matters is the decisions that they take.
James, let's talk about the difference between actions and intentions, because one of the things that's bubbling over from Friday relates to the Downing Street flat. Now, we know that Boris Johnson has now paid what we believe to be a £58,000 bill towards what we believe to be a lavish refurbishment of the flat, though yet to see pictures. And ultimately, it's now being pitched by ministers as a case closed. We had Liz Truss at the weekend out on the broadcast round saying that ultimately, well, the Prime Minister has paid out of his own pocket, almost implying there's now nothing to see here. But it's not really over, is it? Because we have a situation where there are questions as to who paid for it originally. There's suggestions that could have been a Tory donor. If so, was that declared to the Electoral Commission? HMRC are also asking questions about this. How much trouble do you think the Prime Minister is in on this?
So I think you've hit upon what the issue is. The issue is the Prime Minister has now paid for it. Liz Truss's use of tense was quite interesting there. The question is, did somebody else pay for it in the meantime? And if so, who was that? And was that all declared? That is obviously the danger for the Prime Minister. I think that the one thing that I think he can cling to is, and it might seem a bizarre use of his time, but the Cabinet Secretary Simon Case is supposed to be overseeing all this. And it is hard to believe that the Cabinet Secretary would kind of mortgage his own integrity on basically having accepted a series of arrangements that were wrong. I think, as you said, the question is intention, right? So what was discussed but not acted on could, I think, again, be difficult, very difficult for Boris Johnson. But again, as long as it wasn't acted on, then I think there is some limit to how much damage that this can do. I think Labour are also pushing on the question of where did the money come from to pay back the money? How did he suddenly find this £58,000? You know, we know that the reason getting donors to pay for this was discussed was that Boris Johnson was left short of money after an expensive divorce, and you know, and that he's always been somebody who has essentially spent the money that they've earned. I think that the source of money is his own. So I think he's simply taken out some kind of loan on his future earnings or something like that. But I think the question you raise, which is who paid at various points, is where the focus is going to be.
It seems at the moment that, you know, he gets 30 grand allowance for the flat, that her refurbishment went over that budget. He sort of panicked a little bit and then, OK, let's get a Tory donor to give it to the party. The party can cover the costs. So the party would have paid the builder. Then later he thought the better of it and decided to take out a loan, a bank loan, against his future earnings and then refund the party. And that would happen before the story broke in the papers.
Now, do you think that he thought the better of it before the story broke in the papers or after the Daily Mail ran multiple stories about the
fair? That's a very good question. But from what I gather, he thought the better of it beforehand. Now, if that is true, you think, well, why didn't they say so at the time, right? When the story broke, why wouldn't they immediately have said, actually, this he's paid back the money himself? Because when that did happen, that was the point, when that story broke, that they thought, OK, this is the beginning of a Dom Wars. And then Boris Johnson was dragged down from the top flat in his stocking soles to come down to the Cabinet War Room to discuss. Now, that's the point where you would have thought that if the version of events I've just described to you took place, that if he had thought the better of it, repaid the money from a loan taken from a bank, not a donor, against his future earnings, they would have then put out a statement saying the Prime Minister is personally covering all of this. But that didn't happen. Now, was that bad media management, or simply the case that he hadn't actually repaid the loan at that point, and that the Tory party had paid the builders, and that a donor had paid the party? My sense, and Nekutov is wrong, is that this is not the most damaging thing for him. Because, as ever, you have to remember that only a few weeks ago, Jennifer Arcuri was revealing that she had an affair with the Prime Minister, and that didn't seem to harm his reputation at all. If this has happened to, I don't know, Theresa May or Tony Blair, it would have been far more damaging. But with Boris, the test of all these disclosures is, does this change what you know or suspect about him? If it doesn't change what you know or suspect is happening already, then it won't really impact his reputation. And right now, your average punter suspects all sorts of hijinks going on in number 10, far worse than the drama over who's going to pay for new wallpaper and golden door handles in the number 10 flat. So I think this is why it hasn't been as politically damaging for him as it would have been somebody else. Now, you could argue that this is unfair, that anybody else would have been brought down by this. But Boris does seem to operate by different laws of political gravity. I think the idea that he was saying inside number 10 he wants people to die, or is prepared to let thousands of bodies be piled high, that is more damaging if it was credible. The question is whether it's credible, because right now we see a big difference between the excitement on Twitter and the excitement in Westminster on this, which is absolutely huge, by the way. And Friday, when the Dom bomb dropped, I thought, brilliant, let's do. We did two podcasts on that day, Katie. We wrote, I don't know how many articles. And at the end of the day, the most read piece was about electric vehicles, or Wolfgang Mungshow's pieces about Brexit. And I was really quite struck how even our readers, who are quite into politics, were not as interested, or anywhere near as interested, in the Dominic Cummings affair as we were as journalists, and we certainly knew our contemporaries were. This might change. I mean, this might build. This might come to harm him. But right now, I'm also keeping in my head alive the option that the country, basically, people just want their second jab. And they're not particularly worried about the
already suspected. Some people like their first jab.
Well, yeah, but by and large, if you think right now, to take the India story, the tragedy of what's happening in India, people will look at that and they'll contrast this with what's happening in this country. We have had something pretty significant happen in Britain, which is a vaccine success on a scale way bigger than anything else in Europe. And I think this might contribute to right now the high approval rating, which the Prime Minister has, the huge opinion poll lead over Labour that the Tories have. And for all we know, this might not even damage the Tories in the local elections which are coming, certainly not in England. It might damage them in Scotland. So something which ought, in any other era, to any other Prime Minister, be a kind of reputation extinction event, might not harm Boris Johnson anywhere near as much as it would do by the laws of normal Westminster gravity, because Boris Johnson is somebody who defies the laws of Westminster gravity. It's infuriating, it might be deeply unfair, but this is, after all, a guy who got a majority against everybody's expectations in the December 2019 elections, and he might continue to defy those expectations now.
James, I mean, touching on Fraser's point, I don't get the sense that Tory MPs are particularly worried this is going to affect the local elections. As Fraser says, the vaccine role is seen as far more important, but at the same time, I don't think we should dismiss it too much, because we have a situation where clearly these stories cause the Prime Minister great personal anguish. We have a situation where we're hearing reports that the Prime Minister personally briefed journalists about why he thought it was Dominic Cummings that could be behind it. That's not completely confirmed. But we know that part of the reason is he wanted to take a stand. And he also gets very unhappy when he's seeing his messages out there, when he's seeing stories about his fiancée, Carrie Symons. So even if it doesn't affect the poll bans, it's not really a place the Prime Minister wants to be if it's just open warfare every day. Or is it? Because the other number 10 gloss is that actually it's a genius comms move, because now everyone knows it's Dominic Cummings, though he denies it's him, and therefore it's out there before this inquiry.
There's a line in The Godfather, never hate your enemies, it distorts your judgment. And I mean, there is a danger of this. I mean, this fight is so personal. I was talking to someone who is one of the people you might think of could be able to broker a peace between Boris Johnson and Dominic Cummings. And I said, well, is that possible? And they said, just no, because what they want is so different. And it's almost like this is written in the stars, because this is an argument fundamentally. It goes back to kind of who was in charge of a government, who should take the credit for the Brexit referendum, the 2019, you know, getting Brexit done, the 2019 election victory. And there's just this massive tension. I think the other danger, I think it was something you touched upon, Rob Colver touched upon in the Sunday Times, is that this fight is inherently dangerous for Boris Johnson, because if Dominic Cummings' reputation gets damaged in this fight, that ultimately doesn't matter that much to Dominic Cummings. He's not somebody who particularly cares about their own reputation. He's not running for re-election. He's not looking to get some kind of corporate job. Boris Johnson will have to, you know, be re-elected as an MP and as Prime Minister. And so if they throw mud at each other and, you know, roughly equal amount sticks to each of them, that is a worse outcome for Boris Johnson than it is for Dominic Cummings, because Dominic Cummings doesn't have the same need to worry about his reputation that Boris Johnson does. And I think the kind of question is, where does this end? Where does this stop? And it's quite clear now that, you know, that it's hard to imagine Dominic Cummings saying, oh, right, I've done my bit now, I'm stopping. I mean, you know, one has to imagine that his appearance in front of a select committee next month, about a month from now, is going to be even more critical than the stories have been to date. So I think that is the danger for this, is I don't see where this ends.
There's another quote from The Godfather: revenge is a dish best served cold. Boris is serving this revenge very hot right now, and Dominic Cummings is returning in kind. And that's why I really struggle to see any kind of tactical logic to what Number 10 is doing right now. It magnifies Dominic Cummings' role, and it wants to enter a kind of mutually assured destruction war with an adversary who really doesn't care much about destruction. You imagine the Prime Minister does. It's funny, the watching this, even like day 4, day 5, I can't work out why Number 10 is behaving the way he is.
There's a funny paradox, though, isn't there, which is, in England, the Tories are very far ahead. In Scotland, the SNP are very far ahead. Yet both have a kind of level of internal warfare. You know, the Nicola Sturgeon, Alex Salmond story in Scotland, the Boris Johnson, Dominic Cummings story down here, that by the conventional rules of politics, you would think would sink them. You know, voters don't like divided parties. These divisions are on such public display. But obviously, this could change. This doesn't appear to be having any particularly dramatic impact on the polls, either in Scotland or down here.
Now, finally, Fraser, chatty rat is back, and this relates to who is behind the leak of lockdown 2, in the process potentially bouncing Boris Johnson into a second lockdown, potentially changing the course of history and the behaviour of many people in relation to the virus in the hours that followed. Now, this is back in the news because Downing Street decided, when it was doing its briefing, to also point the finger at Dominic Cummings in terms of chatty rat, and then in turn, You guessed it, Dominic Cummings then in his blog suggested that it wasn't him, it was Henry Newman, who is now a senior aide in Number 10, but at the time was working in for Michael Gove. We've had a denial from the government on Henry Newman. James, where does this go now in terms of the chatty rat inquiry? Simon Case is giving evidence this afternoon, and we're expecting him to ultimately say that, contrary to Cummings' claims, he has not been exonerated. But do you think we're going to get a clear defence that is not a figure such as Newman? Because if the inquiry is really not over, which is what we're being told, how do they know who it isn't, let alone who is?
I don't spare a thought for Simon Case, the Cabinet Secretary. I mean, if there could be worse timing for him to be up in front of a select committee than today, it's hard to think of it. He will have to answer some questions about where things are at. And I think if you were an MP on that select committee, the obvious question is Dominic Cummings right to say that he's been exonerated? And secondly, was a view taken on whether Henry Newman was the source of this leak or not before Henry Newman was appointed, as he recently was, to a role in Downing Street? I think the answer Simon Case gives to those questions will be interesting. Many of this fight Number 10 has picked, it's hard to fathom the logic or the rationale for it. But they are completely convinced on this, but they have a hit on this chatty rat point. And so I think that, you know, watch to see what Simon Case says very carefully. But again, as with the recordings, right, if there is supposedly intelligence that shows who it was, until that intelligence is published or publicly confirmed by some non-political figure, such as the Cabinet Secretary, this is just going to be he said, she said, right? I don't see how you establish this definitively unless that is definitively somehow put into the public domain by someone who is not a kind of political appointee.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Fraser. And while we have you here, we have some exciting news. It relates not to Dominic Cummings, but the new Spectator app. Fraser, you're on hand to talk listeners through some of the best things. You want to give us the top three?
Well, there's many great things about it, but it has got it. Basically, you've got Coffee House Shots Reader in your hand. Now, a lot of people listening to us will have us on some kind of, I don't know, iTunes app player. But the great thing about the new Spectator app is it collates all of the Coffee House Shots plus all of the other podcasts that we do as well. You've got every single one.
From Women with Balls.
Women of Balls, exactly. Essential Listening.
Chinese Whispers.
The Book Club, Table Talk. And you can just scroll. It's difficult to describe over a podcast. But if you like Spectator podcasts, I would urge you to try out this app. You can get it on the App Store. You can upgrade your app if you've got one already. You can get it in Android. It is the best way to listen to Spectator podcasts. So please do give it a try. And we hope you'll be trying some more of our podcasts if you like Shots.